You are welcome to our meeting of today. I hope everyone is settled now. It's not the most conducive environment that we are finding ourselves into, but we have to steamroll forward. We'll give over to the committee secretary to lead us into the apologies as well as the proposed agenda.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to members and the department and everybody who's here. The agenda for today, the 18th of April 2018, is as follows. We will receive apologies, followed by the adoption of the agenda. Then there will be deliberations on the bills that are before the committee and a way forward on the processing of those bills. Then there will be consideration of the draft program for the second term and closure. Chairperson, I received the apologies as well yesterday, the same apologies, Mr. Martins, Ms. Mutambi, and Mr. Towama. They said they won't be here this whole week. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Committee Secretary. Honorable members, we have the proposed agenda. Can we get a mover and a seconder or amendments? Honorable Teko, you are noted. Honorable Begum, you are noted.
Madam Chair, now I was just going to say I had sent in an apology for half an hour between 11:30 and 12, if that can be noted today as well.
Also myself, honourable members, I need to attend another scheduled meeting from 12:30 until 1:30, but I don't think it's a train smash because it's lunchtime then, and I think we can then break for that hour. So, honourable Teko, so with that apology, you are moving, honourable Begum. Honourable Teko.
I was off a proposal before I second. We changed the program. We start with the committee program, then we do the other issues.
There's an amendment. I don't think it's a train smash. Do we agree, Honorable Begum?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we move it like that. We start with the committee program, and with that, the agenda has then been moved by the Honorable Begum and seconded by Honorable Teko. Thank you very much. We'll just quickly, because I don't think the members have the hard copies of the program available now to them, we'll just quickly give over to the committee secretary to distribute it. Thank you. So all the members have the proposed draft committee program for the second term in front of us. I propose that we go page by page. We are looking at where the week of 7 to 20 April 2018 on the page 1, week 1. Tuesday, 17 April is already gone. Then we have today's agenda, and then we have Thursday, 19 April's agenda on page 1. Do we have inputs on that, or can we agree on that and move forward?
Except the venue.
It will be changed as from tomorrow, as they promised us. So, Honorable Begram, you are moving. Honorable Tongwani is seconding. Then we move to page 2. The pages are not numbered. Can you please just number it? We're starting on Friday, 20 April, starting with the AG briefing on the audit performance of Dole and its entities, then deliberations on the three bills again. Please take note, honorable members, that we are also in the time of starting with our budget debates and preparing for our budget. And we've been given a deadline by Parliament, so hence we had to slot that in urgently to deal with it and to apply to the deadlines that's been given to us. Hence, we'll receive the briefing, and we know it's usually not very long. So the briefing from AXA we'll receive on Friday, and then we proceed. Week 2, we have Wednesday, 25 April. Because it's a short week and we know there's a public holiday, and we also know that there's some of the members are also deployed to other portfolio committees. Therefore, we can't forever take the whole week. We just made exception during the past 2 or 3 weeks, and therefore we're going to move to our regular slots as from week 2, with certain exceptions. So on Wednesday, 25 April, we're going to have the briefing on the annual performance plans and strat plans of the Department of Labor and entities on the budget vote. The venue there will also be changed because we've just been informed that there's no available venues in Parliament, so we'll have to apply for an outside venue as well because it's going to be a big meeting and we need a bigger venue. Then, Honourable Moteka, I've noted you. Can I just outline the whole page, and then we can engage. On Wednesday, the 2nd May, we are going to consider the outstanding minutes, the engagement with the race horses groomers. We'll remember that in last year, we received a concern that the horse races, they wrote to Parliament and they were referred to the Department of Trade and Industry, and Trade and Industry referred them to the Department of to the Portfolio Committee of Labour, but we didn't have the chance to meet with them. Hence, we saw it fit to slot them in because they also requested us to slot them in urgently. Then we're going to have the consideration and possible adoption of committee report on the budget vote. And on Friday, the 4th of May, we're going to have the draft report on the three bills. And if we are not going to finish with the report, the adoption of the report, we're going to have it there as well. On week 4, Wednesday, 9 May, we're going to have a final deliberations on the three bills as referred to the committee. Can we, Honorable Moteka, I've noted you.
Thanks, Chairperson. My entry is to say, instead of squeezing in the AXA briefing, on the coming Friday, let's move it to Wednesday, because there's only one item on Wednesday, so that we have enough time for the bills on Friday. There's no use for this very important briefing of AXA to be squeezed and rushed, because our focus is more on the bills. So you're bringing another very important item in between them that will cause a problem. Please, just let's just move it to Wednesday, the 25th. Thanks very much.
Noted. Honorable Muteka, Honorable Mashile.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think what is a lot more important for us to be assisted on the proposal made is from yourselves in front, Chair, and the committee secretaries, how long does AXA want to engage us on the audit?
It's about 1 hour.
Yes, and then I think that is what will also assist us, and as well, of course, on Wednesday, where it's referred that we've got one item, but what I'm seeing is that you're talking about the department together with the entities. How many entities are we speaking about?
Five.
I'm asking this because I'm a newcomer.
Yeah, it's five entities.
Yes, so which
plus,
means...
Plus the department.
So that means it is one item, but actually it's five items on that day.
Yeah.
So it's... then the proposal then... should not be supported.
Okay.
Yeah, because otherwise if you take up the AG to there, I think we're going to sit for the whole 18 hours for that day. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mashile. The reason why we slotted it in on Friday is because in the interim we know we're receiving the reports from the different entities as well as the department in advance. So we thought it's going to be best if we receive the briefing from AXA, then the members can look at the details that's been enshrined in the report from AXA and then look at it concurrently with what is entailing in the reports of the entities before they go to the committee on Wednesday, then they'll be better prepared. That's why we've always been doing it, not receive everything on the same day. So, Honorable Muteka, are you revising your proposal or withdrawing it? I'm noting you.
The item on the 25th, appeared as one, but when you explain that there are five entities, that makes me to withdraw my proposal. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Muteka. Then we are in agreement. Honorable Begrim, is there a contrary view?
There's no contrary view, but I do want to say that we've got the briefing from the auditor first. I wouldn't like to put a ceiling of 1 hour. I mean, obviously, we'll have questions for them as well. And if we have to crowd out a little bit of the next part of the agenda, that's fine. But I would strongly support Friday, the 20th, for that. And keep them first so that we don't chase them out of here.
No.
Thank you.
It's agreed upon, Honorable Members. We are just estimating that it's about 1 hour, but we may move beyond it because we can't say strictly it's going to be 1 hour. But we also ask members to restrain themselves from having 101 questions. And you just switch off your microphone, Honorable Begrim. So then we agree on that one. There's the other days as well. We've agreed on 20, 25, the 2nd and the 4th and the 9th. Are we also in agreement? Just take note, Honorable Members, on Wednesday the 9th, seeing that on the 4th we're going to deal with a draft report, then it means we have to amend the wording there at Wednesday the 9th to say final report also on the three bills, not the final deliberations. With that amendment, do we then agree on page 2? I take it it's being agreed as proposed by Honorable Muteka and supported by Honorable Mashile. Then we move to page 3, starting on the week 5, Wednesday 16 May, briefing on quarter 3 of the Department of Labor and Entities. Week 6, Wednesday the 23rd of May, consideration of outstanding draft minutes update on the Department of Labor and Action Plan of the Compensation Fund. Wednesday 30 May, consideration of outstanding draft minutes, update on the Department of Labor on Labor Activation Plan of UIF, week 8, Wednesday, 6 June, consideration of outstanding draft minutes, briefing by high-level panel on its recommendations pertaining to labor sector. Also note, honorable members, there's no venues yet confirmed, so that will also be sent to us in due course. That's page 3 for you. Do we agree on that one, or do we have any other proposals? Honorable Tongwani, move. Honorable Mjobo, second. Then page 4, Wednesday the 13th of June, consideration of the draft report on quarter 3 of Dole and outstanding draft minutes. Yeah, then we have a preliminary item, 28 May to 8 June, on the International Labour Organization. We are not quite sure yet, but that is what we estimate, or what we've received currently. And then the constituency period. So those dates might change as we move on. And with that, we have page 4, the final page. Can we have a move in a second, Honorable Teko, and then Honorable Mjobo. Then for the whole draft committee program, second term, can we have a mover, Honorable Teko, and Honorable Mjobo, it's agreed then, honorable members, that's our draft program for the second term. Thank you very much. We move then to the next item on our agenda. It's going to be the way forward on the processing of the labor bills before the committee. No deliberations on the labor bills, sorry. I'm taking it right through to the end. Honorable members, we've received our documents yesterday, and I would like to advise the members that today we're going to start with the National Minimum Wage Bill and the Basic Conditions of Employment Amendment Act, and some of the proposed amendments, or the proposals in the National Minimum Wage Bill, it's affecting proposals in the amendment of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Hence, I thought we should do both today, or start with both today, and see how far we're going to go. We're going to make use of the documents as being presented by the department yesterday, because that's quite elaborate, and it's including all the proposed amendments. Unless there's something else that we think that's not contained here and we want to bring it to the table, then we have we should feel free to also include it. So the approach that we're going to take, we have present here representatives from the State Law Advisor as well as the Parliamentary Legal Services. And we also have the department here presented, and we are going to give them also the opportunity to come in where they see it fit to give us advice on how we're going to move forward. But also remember, honorable members, this is not a bill that's in the hands of the department anymore. It's in our hands, so we have to pave the way forward on what we want, how we want the final bills to look like. So without wasting any time, we are on the first document, the report on public comment on the National Minimum Wage Bill, page 1, if all of us have it in front of us. Can we proceed? Honorable Teko?
Remember, I didn't hear it correctly. I want to check, are we getting the part that is affected, or we're dealing page by page, weight by weight now? Or we can start with those part that is affected, and then we can come and do weight.
Honorable Teko, what we're going to do is, there's not comments that's been submitted on every clause, on all the clause. So we're just going to zoom into the clause that's been contested, and then the committee, because we've received the draft bills as it's been advertised. So if there are any other amendments that individual parties or individual members wants to raise that's not forming part of the clauses that's been identified, you can feel free to go in or to make your proposals. But for now, the way we're going to do it is according to the comments that were made, starting from the preamble. And afterwards, remember that clause by clause will be done at the last day when we receive the amendments that has been made based on our deliberations and our inputs and our guidance. Are we clear on that one? Thank you, Honourable Member. So we start with a preamble, and the input that we've received was from AgriSA, and the comment was, it is agreed that measures are needed to eradicate poverty and inequality, but AgriSA believes that effective redress will only occur in an environment of economic growth. So the response in this regard from the department was, the department notes the comment and agrees that effective redress will require an environment of economic growth. So now, we have the bills also in front of us, Honourable Members. So when we go to the National Minimum Wage Bill itself, we have the preamble there. With a comment that was received as well as the response. Can we have some input on that one? Honourable Begram, you are noted. You may proceed.
There's no other. Thank you, Madam Chair. My comment on that one is that the national minimum wage is doing exactly the opposite. We know, and we've had evidence now, that their jobs will be lost. So I'm not sure in what way we can agree that effective redress is going to happen to economic growth. I don't understand that, because we're doing exactly the opposite. We're losing jobs. So thank you. That's just my comment on that.
There's a comment on that, Honourable Moteka.
Chairperson, let me partly agree with this comment that says the measures are needed to eradicate poverty and inequality. So the response from the department, I don't think is covering all these two important components of the comment, because what it must cover is that although we require the environment to be of that conducive economic growth, poverty and inequality must be eradicated, so that anything we do, we consider eradication of poverty and inequality, because anything less than that, then is not addressing what you are here for. Thanks.
Honourable Members, I hope you have the gazetted versions of the bills in front of you also, so that they can see what is actually contained in the bill and read it in conjunction with the comments that has been made. As it currently stands, it's saying in the preamble, recognizing the Republic of South Africa is one of the most unequal societies in the world, and there are huge disparities in income in the national labor market, or maybe start from the first part. The aim is to provide for a national minimum wage, to establish the National Minimum Wage Commission, to provide for composition and functions of the National Minimum Wage Commission, to provide for the review and annual adjustment of the national minimum wage, to provide for exemption from paying the national minimum wage, to provide for transitional provisions in respect of farm workers and domestic workers, and to provide for matters connected therein. That's what the preamble is saying. On, is it page 233? Do we have it? Honorable Member. It's the Gazette's version.
I don't have that.
It's been sent to all of us, honorable members. Portia, do we have copies extra? Hard copies of the bill? But anyhow, there's no other bones of contention in terms of what's been said. Can we...
Chairperson.
Honorable Moteka.
I just want to check which document you is the bills.
No. The document I'm referring to is the documents that were circulated to us yesterday. Remember I said we should bring all the documents with us.
But I'm talking about the one you are reading now.
No, it's the gazetted version of the bill. Which others of us printed when it was sent to us. Can we give a copy to Honorable Moteka?
Yeah, I don't know.
Can you just share, Honorable Members? Honorable Tongwani and it's been sent to us way back, Honorable Moteka. It's really going to prolong us now. Can you open your iPads and the electronic versions, because it's exactly the same. And the comments is in front of us, so we don't, you don't really need the whole document if you zoom into the comments that was made. Honorable Moteka, the ones that we also received, this one, is exactly the same as being gazetted. It's just having another covering letter or cover page. Can you just scan through your documents? But really, we are not going to pause now. We're going to move forward. What are we saying, Honorable Mashile?
Chairperson, is a comment from AgriSA. When it raised that part and say, but effective redress will only occur in an environment of economic growth. I'm just worried, what is the intent of that? Do they seek to indicate that we should not expect an effective redress for poverty and inequality now under the period of no economic growth or low economic growth? What is the intent? And possibly anyone that has got the capacity to make me understand exactly why are they raising that? Because the Department of Labor is not in charge of economic growth. It's not in charge of that. But when you attach that as some sort of a condition, and then from my side, I'm just a little bit skeptical. I'm not seriously versed with their arguments on other documents, but just to state that as a condition, I don't know whether we seek to say no to the minimum wage implementation in this current period where we don't have growth, or what is the intent?
Thank you, Honorable Mashila. I think we have advice here. You may can you just put your name on the record, please?
Mongameli Kweta, Chairperson from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Chair, I would like to draw the members' attention to the preamble of the bill. Not the long title, Chair, the preamble. The long title will be those letters which are bold, and then below that will be the preamble, Chair. Now, the second statement of the preamble states that, noting the need to eradicate poverty and equality, that is the preamble of the bill. I think the commentators are commenting on that statement, mm-hmm. that the bill, the purpose of the bill, it notes that there is a need to eradicate poverty and inequality. Hence, Chair, the Agri-SA is stating that it is agreed that measures are needed to eradicate poverty and inequality. But Agri-SA believes that effective redress will only occur in an environment of economic growth. So they are drawing their statement from the statement contained in the preamble of the bill, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kwete. Is that clear to us, Honorable Ngwezi? You raise your hand, or are you covered now?
No, thank you, Chair. You know, I'm worried that in this response, or my understanding is that Agri-SA is putting a condition that they can only start the implementation once the economy is doing well. You know, so they shouldn't put there. They should. So you can't attach because we are not in charge of the economy as the portfolio committee. Ours is to actually, you know, propose legislation. You know, but this one is a condition that no. And yesterday I heard their comments. They said they will require 3 years to actually implement, you know, the proposal made by the portfolio committee. So I think according to their, you know, view, that by that time they will be able to. And I don't think once the bill has been passed, there is, you know, some time that will be giving other organizations. So we expect them to implement immediately the bill.
Thank you, Honorable Ngwezi. It means, therefore, that the comment, I've listened to what the Honorable Mashile raised as well as what you've just raised, and it means, therefore, that you agree that as it's currently stated in the draft bill, it should remain like that. Is that our intention? Then agreed to. DG, would you come in at this stage?
Thank you, Chair. The comment made by Agri-SA was The comment made by Agri-SA yesterday was that they support the national minimum wage. The only thing that they were pleading for was the extension of the transitional period from what it is now, and they wanted it to be extended by a year. And I take it that they agreed with all what is in here, all what they were pleading is for that transitional period to be extended. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. Then we'll get to that issue when we get to that clause. So in terms of what's being before us, we agree that the preamble stays the same. Then we go to the next item, Chapter 1, Interpretation, Purpose and Application. Point 1, Definitions. Again, by Agri-SA, definition of a worker. Given different definitions between the BCAA, LRA, and National Minimum Wage, it is unclear which definition will be used LRA and BCAA define workplace as the place where the employee of the employer works, and then the response by the department worker will be defined as follows. Worker means any person who works for another and who receives or is entitled to receive any payment for that work, whether in money or in kind. Then the next one is from Forestry SA on the definition. Forestry SA recommends that the definition of employer take account of situations where workers perform work for people other than the direct employer, for example, labor brokers. The amended definition proposed is any person who is obliged to pay a worker for the work that worker performs for that or any other person. Response: this would introduce uncertainty as to who has responsibility to pay a worker. The obligation rests with the person from whom the work is performed. Then Labor and Enterprise Policy Research Group, Section 1 on definitions, the use of definition of employee as defined in the BCAA will narrow the scope of application of the national minimum wage and will compromise its ability to achieve its objective. The NATLAG agreement was based on a broader definition which will include independent contractors. On the next page, page 2. The BCA also retains section 62A, which is not aligned to the change definition in the National Minimum Wage Bill. The response of the department definition of worker will be amended. Section 62A aligns the definition in the BCAA to that of the National Minimum Wage once the letter is corrected, and they will be consistent. So in actual fact, the department is then agreeing that the definition as being stipulated in the draft bill will be amended. Are you in a position to give us the amended version at this stage, DG? Can you proceed then?
Thank you, Chair. The amended version reads as follows. A worker means any person who works for another and who receives or is entitled to receive any payment for that work, whether in money or in kind. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. That's the amended version. Do we agree with that one, Honourable Members, or do we want to amend it? I'm noting hence the Honourable Bagrim and then the Honourable Muteka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want it noted that in no fashion or form will the Democratic Alliance agree that it should be worker. We should keep to the definition as contained in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act of employee. Throughout, we do not agree under any circumstances this definition of a worker coming into the situation of the national minimum wage. And we want to keep reiterating it. I don't want to keep repeating it, but you will see that as the golden thread running through everything we're suggesting. What you're really suggesting is that as soon as someone performs anything for anyone else and gets some money for it, they fall under the national minimum wage. We think it will be destructive. We think it will destroy the economy in its entirety. It will be interesting to see how much money lawyers make out of the whole exercise. But at the end of the day, we don't agree to any of the responses as contained by the Department of Labor. I can expand on it. I can take you through court cases. I can take you through experiments done around the world. I don't think this is the time or place to do it, but we do not agree under any circumstances.
Point noted, Honorable Muteka.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. You know, I'm happy with the explanation and with the response from the department, because this definition will cover even the most vulnerable and neglected. CCGs, fishing industry, EPWPs, they will be covered. So I'm very happy with the response. It should stay like that.
Thank you, Honorable Moteka. You are then agreeing with the amended version. Honorable Teko?
Thanks, Chair. I think we are in agreement with the definition as it is said by the DG, the amended version. So ANC is fine with the definition.
Okay, there's two views on the table. The one as being amended, seconded, proposed by the Honorable Moteka and being seconded by the Honorable Teko. And then there's the one view by the Democratic Alliance. Do we have a seconder for that view? He indicated it's from the Democratic Alliance.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. Honorable Mashile?
Chair, I think this is some of the parts that have been dealt with before I pitched up here. I would have loved to be sponsored with an explanation on the difference between an employee and a worker, whether there has been any discussion on that. And if I can just be sponsored, what has happened, and then probably then I will be knowing exactly which way to look.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. We'll give to the Department of Justice, give us a brief explanation on that one. Just for the benefit of those members that joined us late in the committee.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members and people attending the committee meeting. Chair, we believe that, firstly, both worker as well as employee are definitions and concepts that the ILO uses interchangeably for different purposes in both in conventions, recommendations, and a number of instruments of the ILO. So the ILO firstly recognizes the distinction between worker and an employee in the context of the policy that they develop. We believe that workers are more expensive definition than employee, and it covers a broader scope of workers. And we hope that the national minimum wage will then provide the necessary coverage to those not only in employment, but also those that are being employed to do work, as the member of the DA has indicated. And we think that it provides the necessary protection and the extension of the protection that the national minimum wage has envisaged.
Thank you, Mr. Seafield. Can you just switch off your mic? Okay. Honorable America and then Honorable Ngwezi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the representative of the department is playing around with words. He didn't provide a clear distinction between, in terms of the employment relationship, what the difference is between a worker and an employee. And that is what Honorable Mashile was asking. He was just, obfuscating. I can give him an explanation.
Can we request the DG? Do you want to come in?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Seafield indicated that the worker is a definition which is much more expansive, and it includes even independent contractors and other people. The employee means, as defined in the Basic Condition of Employment Act currently, any person, excluding an independent contractor, who works for another person or for the state, and who receives or is entitled to receive any remuneration, and any other person who in any manner assists in carrying on or conducting the business of an employer. That's what the BCA defines it.
Thank you, DG. Can we get advice from the Parliamentary Legal Services on the legality of definition?
Chair, indeed, there's a difference between the two definitions.
the national minimum wage casts the net a lot wider, particularly on the aspect of an independent contractor. And the difference would be an employee for purposes of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act would be allowed many other benefits, so leave, sick leave, maternity leave, and so on and so forth, which rationally would not apply to somebody that's doing piecemeal work for you, somebody that comes in once a week to wash your car or clean your windows or whatever the case may be. Technically, you wouldn't think of them as an employee. What this bill seeks to do, though, is saying notwithstanding that that person isn't your employee for purposes of basic conditions, and in fact basic conditions stipulate that people that work less than 24 hours a month in any case don't receive many of the protections in the Act. It's now saying that notwithstanding that, we are still going to ensure that those persons are paid a minimum of 20 rand. Of course, I think the courts will develop jurisprudence as time goes on this meaning of worker, but I don't foresee that it's going to be too problematic because we must look at this in the context of the financial threshold year, which is just 20 rand. Your true independent contractors, your true business people, I doubt that they will be delivering services, whatever their services are, for an amount of 20 rand an hour in any case. Those are people that we will be able to show are running businesses and that are providing services. So they service providers. So even though the definition is cast wider, I understand that the wider definition is necessary to give effect to the policy intent. That's my understanding. There are some practical implications, however, Chair. By way of example, later on in the bill, it does say that Section 32 and Section 33, in particular of Basic Conditions of Employment, will also apply to people earning the national minimum wage. And those sections in particular deal with the payment of remuneration. And it allows, by way of example, that a person who is owed a wage can be paid that wage within 7 days of performing a service. So there you might find a practical concern that somebody that does perform 2 or 3 hours of service for somebody by cleaning their garden or whatever the case may be is told to come back the following week to collect their money when you leave the two together. But I think those are things that can be managed. I doubt that people will agree to do work to only come back the following week to collect money. But as far as the definition is concerned, we understand that in order to give effect to the policy intent, this cannot read employee, because then it takes you within the realm of the basic conditions, which expressly excludes an independent contractor.
Thank you for that one, which means in essence then that the poorest of the poor that's currently being disadvantaged by through that definition will actually be benefited by the new definition. Honorable Bagram?
Thank you. I'm not sure how they're going to be benefited. I'll give an example, and maybe the legal advisor and the department can sort me out on this. Every morning when I drive down to Parliament, at the traffic light near my home, a fellow washes my window, not that I want it washed, and even though it's raining, and then I give him 10 rand. And I drive on. Every single morning, the same man. I can't now pay him 10 rand. I won't. And I'll tell him he's not allowed to wash my window because he'll be a worker. And I don't want a worker, in effect. I also don't want to give him a pay slip and everything else. And however ridiculous it might seem, we're going to actually cut out the fellow, for instance, that sells you apples at the side of the road and you ask him to do something else for you, we're going to have a real problem. But so be it. What I'm really saying is we don't agree to that. And what's more, I think it's not going to sort out the poorest of the poor. It'll do exactly the opposite. People will say, I don't want to attract any sort of legislation to me. If I want to wash my window, I'll wash it. If I want to wash my car, I'll wash it.
Yeah,
you'll do exactly the opposite. Now, I just wanted to make my point, because people seem to think this is going to help the poorest of the poor, when in fact it's not going to. It's going to cut that out in its entirety.
Your point is noted, Honourable Begum, but please take note, Honourable Moteka. I'm not going to give you now to rebut that because you've already explained or elaborated fully on that, and you also clearly indicated that you are agreeing on the revised definition, and it's been supported by the Honourable Mashile, the from the ANC, and Honourable Begum and Honourable America clearly stated that as a Democratic Alliance, they are not agreeing on that. Do we have a contrary? We have two views that's been seconded, moved and seconded. Do we have a contrary view or other views that's supporting one of the other the views? One view by sponsored by Honourable Moteka, agreed to by Honourable Mashile, and the other one by the two honourable members from the Democratic Alliance. Honourable Teko.
Chair, I said I'm in agreement with the definition of the Labour, so the ANC is covered on that.
Okay. Thank you. Then the majority view is then that the definition should be amended as being forwarded by the department. So we move on, honourable members. We know the no, that's what I'm saying. The majority view is, and but we know the objection of the Democratic Alliance in terms of that. Then on page 2, we are going to the purpose of the act. The first one by Agri SA. It is noted that the bill seeks to advance economic development and social justice in the context of current economic conditions and the drought in some provinces. Agri SA is of the view that implementation of the national minimum wage in the agricultural sector at this stage is problematic and may lead to unnecessary dismissals. Then the response is, it is expected that employers who are law-abiding will apply for exemptions where conditions make it necessary for them to do so. Resorting to dismissals should not be necessary as there is a remedy in the exemption process. The exemption process will be made simple and transparent. By Forestry SA Clause 2D, repeat of supporting economic policy. Okay. Let's first deal with that first one. Let's first deal with the first one. There we have it, honourable members. We have the concern by Agri SA that it's going to be a lot of dismissals, and the response is that there is provision that's been made in the bill for exemptions. And as we can recall, that's been stated also yesterday, is by BUSA, is they also signatories to the Code of Good Practice as per the NECLEC agreement, that they will not dismiss people based on the implementation of the national minimum wage. So that's what we have here. Can we have a comment from the honourable members? The honourable Begum, I'm noting you. You may.
Thanks, I thought I was just noted. Yes, I did want to make a couple of comments. The first comment is, by saying it is expected that employers who are law-abiding will apply for exemptions, well, that's all very well, but already we have law in this country. We have a very good Labor Relations Act. The Director General will know, and certainly will be able to underline this, that about 70% of the South African workforce don't even have letters of appointment. I deal with people every day, and I'm sure he comes across it all the time, but I can take him right next door and show him that people don't have letters of appointment. People will not. This legislation will probably force a lot of people just to ignore it in its entirety. So I'm not sure where that comment comes from. Then, as with regard to resorting to dismissals, the Director General will also understand that dismissal is under the heading of also retrenchments, dismissals for operational requirements. Now, you can never force anyone to employ someone if they can't afford them.
That we all know. I think that's common knowledge around the world. If you can't afford, then you will dismiss, retrench. And in fact, also people will stop employing, which you didn't think about. And already we're seeing that. That's become common practice already. People are saying, we're not going to create any further jobs. Let's wait and see. Let's wait for a year or two until after the law comes into force, and we'll see whether we want to expand our businesses or whether we want to invest elsewhere. And we're seeing that already. So I don't buy this. With regard to the exemption process, it's simple and transparent. The proof is in the pudding. When you have an avalanche of applications for exemptions, it'll be very interesting to then see how long it takes, how easy it is. But the reality is that if I'm running a business down the road in Khayelitsha, I've got no access to bookkeepers and computers and all sorts of other things. I'm not going to apply for an exemption. I'm just going to avoid the law, which is going to become a common practice.
Okay.
I thought I'd make the comment. Thank you.
Yeah, noted. Honorable Mateka.
Chairperson, in South Africa, we are very good. We are very lenient. You know, ILO is, in fact, discouraging this thing of exemptions. But in South Africa, we still allow it. But you can still hear this negativity from employers. Group and the parties that represent them, and we that invites strict requirements and measures to make sure that indeed an employer qualifies for exemption. This thing of that is going to be easy and all that, it should not be like that. It should be very strict and all that, because we can hear from them. We heard from yesterday, previous days and all that, even today we can hear that they are not ready to comply, and they tell us straight that they are not going to do it, and we are still saying to them, we're going to make it simple. We're going to make it simple. Internationally it is not encouraged to be done. Here we are saying, let's think for them, but still you get this kind of attitude. I'm calling for the very strict, in that explanation, very strict measures to make sure that indeed an employer qualifies for exemption.
So in actual fact, you agree with the purpose as it currently stands, that it should remain the same and not be amended?
That it will be easy, it must be out.
Yeah.
It cannot be easy, simple, and like that.
Honorable Mashile, and then Honorable
Chairperson, my feeling is that AgriSA is just making a comment on how they view things, but it's not a matter that is sitting in the papers. It's a perception that they are actually putting up in front. And but what we understand now is from the department is that there would be a process, an exemption process, for those that would feel the pinch when this is implemented straight away after the signing of the bill. But then now, Chair, is that all of us, together with the DA, I think we must accept the view that the department says that there will be this particular process of exemption. It is now up to us to look at the regulations that will come to effect that particular process, that the department sticks to what they have promised. But with Honorable Mteka, is that what the department is saying here is the process will be made simple and transparent. It doesn't mean that it will be easy. It may be a simple process, but stringent for compliance. And I think that's what we just need to open our eyes when the regulations come up to be. that we leave to this particular statement. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. There's a view by the Honorable Bagrim, and it's not being supported, of course, by the Honorable America. Then there's a view by Honorable Moteka and supported by the Honorable Mashile that we should keep it like this and look out for the regulations and then make sure that indeed the exemption process will be made simple and transparent. Honorable Teko? She's in a... Honorable Teko, can you put it on record, Honorable?
Thanks, Chair. I'm in support of the way it is.
The latter part. Thank you, Honorable Members. So the majority view then agrees with it being... it to say as it currently stated in the draft bill. Honourable Members, DG?
I think to accept the duplication in terms of supporting economic policy.
No, we're getting to that close D now. Okay. But Honourable Members, before we move forward, can we assist each other? Because I think on page one I've missed something, and that is the definition of employee. We've dealt with the definition of worker, but we haven't dealt with the definition of worker, of employer, as brought forward by Forestry SA. Forestry SA recommends the definition of employee take account of situations where workers perform work for other people, that paragraph. And then the response of the department, this would introduce uncertainty as to who has responsibility to pay a worker. The obligation rests with the person from whom the work is performed. So if we go to the draft bill, we see the definition of employer that would means any person who's obliged to pay a worker for the work that worker performs for that person. That's the revised definition of employer, or the definition as entailed in the definitions. No, not worker, of employer. Sorry, we've dealt with the worker part. Employer.
Thanks, sir. We are not agreeing with the, because we're dealing with worker, not the employer. So we have agreed on the... that is proposed here, we are not in agreement with.
Honourable Member, when we look at Chapter 1 of the bill, it's outlining different definitions, and that's what we are dealing with. Not the application of the Act that is supposed to apply to what or what. What Forestry SA is saying, they want to revise the definition of employer, and they don't agree with it as it's been stipulated in Chapter 1. And the department indicates that that's going to be problematic. It would introduce uncertainty. So which means the department proposed that it stays the same as it's in the... So you agree that it stays the same. Honorable Moteka, and then Honorable Bagram, and then Honorable Moteka, and that Honorable Mashile.
It's not a waste of time... Chairperson, I see it as good as it is.
Thank you. So, Honourable Teko proposed, Honourable Moteka agrees. Honourable Bagram, do you have a different view?
I've got a slightly different view, Madam Chair, and thank you for allowing me this. There is a outstanding constitutional court judgment on the definition of an employee, of an employer. At the moment, we see that it's swinging between who actually becomes the employer, whether someone's working out at as an outsourced business or not. And I think we need to take that into account, because I think that judgment will be coming soon, within the next few weeks, in fact. And I think we should take note and at least wait. I don't think it's going to hamper us in any way, and maybe our legal advisor can... Maybe she's got better knowledge as to when it's coming out, but I think it's imminent. From what I understand, it's coming out within a week or two. And they're going to define what is an employer.
Thank you.
Thank you for that information. The legal advisor?
Chair, Honourable Bagram is correct. The judgment is the NUMSA versus Assigned Services, and it was a decision of the Labour Appeal Court who found that temporary employment services for purposes of the Labour Relations Act, if you work for longer than 3 months, if you're assigned to work somewhere for longer than 3 months, then you automatically become an employee of the place where you are now stationed to work, and that's gone on appeal. So the definition may then be problematic. What I have considered then is perhaps that we amend the definition slightly to say means any person under employee, at least, under worker, sorry, means any person who works for another and who receives or is entitled to receive any payment. Oh, no, sorry, Chair, I'm a little bit...
We are looking at employees.
Yes.
Now, I know, Chair, I'm just looking for my notes. And the employer to maybe slightly amend the definition to read means any person who is obliged to pay a worker for the work that the worker performs for that person or, and this is the addition that I've made, or on behalf of that person. Because that would then cover the temporary employment service in that 3 month period at least, which would mean that the TES would be responsible in the first 3 months, and after that it would be the actual employer for purposes of the LRA. I think that will assist us, notwithstanding whatever the judgment is, just for interpretation. Thank you, legal advisor. Honourable Mashile, we got guidance there.
Yes, Chair, I would propose that we just flag this and come back to it. Because
in pending the outcome of the judgment.
Not necessarily. If we can just simply give ourselves time to apply our minds a little bit on it, because you'll remember that also the you have a situation of the labor brokers, whom these labor brokers are employers in kind. But if they don't pay, and the labor broker is actually subcontracting to Pick and Pay, at the end the Pick and Pay becomes the employer of some sort, when there is challenges of people not getting paid. And there is those kind of gray areas. I would be saying that if we can just flag and then come back to it, possibly we would have processed what the advice that we have been given.
Okay. We agree on that approach, that before we step off the national minimum wage bill, most probably by the end of tomorrow, then we just come back to that. Then it gives us some time as individual parties to absorb that also. Okay. Honorable Muteka?
Jefferson, I think the legal advisor can clarify more, because I missed the explanation of this addition of "or on behalf of that person," because maybe by that time tomorrow when we discuss it, she can in full explain it. And I think I agree with Mr. Mashile. The whole explanation is complicated by the issue of labor brokers as well, and labor, which we don't need. We must come to it later on the later stage to eradicate it.
Thank you, Honourable Muteka. Can we please note, Honourable Members, we know that the spirit runs high, but can we try and limit our inputs so that we can deal with. I'll just request the legal advisor just to put it in writing what you've said for the members, just to absorb it better, so that we can come back to it before we step off of this item. Okay. So then we go back to page 2. DG, sorry.
Chair, we would also like to put forward our argument as to why we should keep it as it is.
We are listening.
We thought we'll do it in writing as well.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We agree. Just before, by the end of today, so that members will be able to scrutinize. Thank you very much. Okay, then we go back. On page 2, the second part of point 2, Forestry SA, we look then at the purpose of the Act, clause D, and I think it's just for noting purposes. The repeat, we see clause D is indicating promoting collective bargaining and supporting economic policy. And then we go to point E, that's setting supporting economic policy. So it's a duplication. So it's just for noting purposes. I think we all agree, Honorable Mashile, just to delete that first part.
Chair, I think it's the part to be deleted should be the one on D, not the one on E.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that will
support
that. That's
the proposal. Thank you. So we all agree. We are all in agreement. Thank you. Then we move forward. The next one is objectives by the Institute of Economic Justice on the objectives of introducing a national minimum wage. The national minimum wage intended to be part of a new national wage policy that should aim to reconfigure the wage structure and overcome the apartheid cheap labor legacy. It should be seen as part of a broader socio-economic transformation agenda. The national minimum wage should be part of a broader package of measures. Then the response by the department noted, it is expected that over time the national minimum wage will contribute to reconfiguring the wage structure. It currently does constitute an important part of the department's policy approach to protecting low-paid workers and regulating the labor market accordingly. The department, together with other departments in government, is working on broader measures that include, inter alia, a comprehensive social security reform process, the National Health Initiative, and a job summit to deal with job creation. Now, that's the first part. Then the subsection is stating, do the bills achieve these objectives? And the comment is the national minimum wage level. The portfolio committee should ensure that the aspects which related to the value of the national minimum wage should be strengthened in the bill. The response is Section 7B1 of the National Minimum Wage Bill requires that the commission consider the need to retain the value of the minimum wage in light of inflation and the cost of living. Section 7B. We go to the actual bill. And then the last part, let me just check. No, it's not the last part. The following part, the National Minimum Wage NCB Section 4.7 should be amended to prescribe that sector determinations based bargaining council agreements or private contracts which are more favorable than the national minimum wage be decreased after or in anticipation of the national minimum wage. The response from the department, Section 4, 4 and 5, ensure that the national minimum wage is the basic floor and Section 4, 7 would apply to any employer and is therefore broad enough in its application to cover the concern raised.
Then we go to the hourly denomination. The National Minimum Wage Commission should review the hourly provision and disposable abuse after the first year and consider the introduction of a weekly and or monthly national minimum wage. The response by the department noted, although an hourly minimum remains the most appropriate denomination of the national minimum wage for the circumstances that apply in the SA labor market, in particular the significant number of casual, seasonal, contract work and workers in other forms of employment and remuneration. Then the comments. A table should be included setting out the weekly and monthly equivalents of the national minimum wage. The response, this can be included in the memorandum of objects or as a guideline or protocol. The comments, working hours, the commission should investigate a transitional provision to investigate the minimum payment for working hours. The response, the February 2017 agreement between the NEDLAC social partners does include a process around the minimum guaranteed hours of work, and this was dealt with by the Committee of Principals in their meeting of 21 September 2017. So basically all the concerns that has been raised in that column, that whole column, the response, DG, you'll assist me if I'm correct, but your response indicates that everything has been dealt with properly. That's your response. So, which means that that part currently stands in the purpose of the Act, it can remain the same. To have comments, Honourable Bagram, Honourable Muteka, Honourable Mashile. Yes, yes, please, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to go to the first comment from the department, where they say that department's policy approach to protecting low-paid workers and regulating the labour market accordingly. I'm not sure what they mean regulating. We're already over-regulated. It certainly doesn't get implemented ever, but we're over-regulated. So maybe they can just give me a comment on what that means. I then go to the third paragraph, and that the Commission considers the need to retain the value of the minimum wage in light of inflation and the cost of living. I presume that they're also reading it in conjunction with this section, I don't have it in front of me, where it says that we need to retain jobs as well. In other words, it mustn't be destructive to the economy. And I presume they mean that that must be read with that, and they can comment on that. Then the fourth paragraph on that page, too, it doesn't cover the concerns raised. Because the department there is merely talking about the floor of wages. What I think the Institute for Economic Justice was talking about, and which we've been speaking about throughout, is protecting all sorts of other terms and conditions of employment. That basically the determinations and the BC agreements actually cover. In other words, employees don't just get their wages. They have to protect other rights and benefits that they get, and that's not covered at all by just throwing out the sectorial determinations. And of course, as we know, the bargaining councils are in their last throes of life, so I'm not sure. We should actually be somehow enhancing the bargaining councils. If I may then go on to page 3, the first comment from the department there, I agree entirely with it that the hourly minimum wage rate is the most appropriate. But then their second comment says this can be included in the memorandum of objectives. If we retaining the hourly minimum rate, I'm not sure why we need to have a table setting out weekly and monthly, unless, of course, employees do actually get one day a letter of appointment or a contract of employment, then they'll know more or less what they're earning monthly or weekly. And we must look at that carefully. So I'm not sure why that second comment comes in. And then it said the commission should investigate a transitional provision to investigate the minimum wage, the minimum payment for working hours. The department merely then refers us to the Committee of Principles in their meeting 21 September 2017. I don't have that minute, the minute of the meeting 21 September 2017. I don't remember it ever being distributed to us. Maybe the department could distribute it, then I can understand what they mean when they say that. Because I've never read it, but maybe I'm the only one in this committee that has not received the minutes of that meeting of the Committee of Principles, 21 September 2017. Thanks for allowing me to comment.
Thank you, Honourable Begum. Honourable Mateka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the comments from Institute of Economic Justice should stay, and because they are very progressive. And I will give you an example on page 2, paragraph number 2, where they talk of the national minimum wage level. The portfolio committee should ensure. And the response says the commission can consider. So I think I choose the part of IEJ because it is talking about ensuring that it is happening. And when I go down again, where they talk of hourly denominations, we got it from the submissions of various stakeholders that there is a room for the abuse of hours, reduction of hours, because this week they feel like they want to pay so much, they can reduce the hours and all that. And hence there is a point of there should be the weekly, the workers must know by week how much am I working for, by month how much am I working for, so that we don't give an employer a room to play with ours, as a result workers taking home nothing. And then I want to agree with Mr. Ye on the issue of NetLeg, February 2017. We don't have that document. We don't have that proof. And my question is, what was the agreement? How many hours were stapled and agreed upon that the minimum hours per week will be so much or per month? We don't know. So we can't work with something that we don't know. Unless they can put it on record, it was so many hours that was agreed, then we'll be able to agree or not agree. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mateka. Honorable Mashile?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine, I think, on Section 2, I'm just trying to read A, improving the wages of the lowest paid workers. How would that be interpreted after the implementation of the minimum wage? Just after we implement it, how would that sentence be interpreted moving forward? But then in terms of the comments that we have from IEJ, majority of them are technical matters, really, of managing some of the provisions that we have in the bill, which I think may need to find expressions where we had to ensure that the minimum wage is not undermined and all that. that these are some of the things that the regulations have to be very clear. Of course, is that you set the minimum wage as a monthly payment, and then it gets undermined through the hourly packages. You set it as on an hourly packages as well, and then they just allocate people to work just a few hours, and then it becomes a bit of a problem. Whether it's a weekly, whatever you're going to do, then there will be those downsides of it. And but like as I'm saying, is that it's the regulations that are going to assist us with the mechanisms and regimes that are required to protect the intended purpose of the Act. And therefore is that, Chair, the regulations, I think they are going to be one of the biggest things that we need to develop second sets of eyes when we look at them, so that we ensure that there are no loopholes of undermining the Act. And in principle, there is the comments that have been made. Some of them, they are political narratives. I mean, the minimum wage, we are just providing the base under which our workers in the country should not be paid. We can have all these other political narratives that we are saying, but we are providing the bottom ceiling under which we are saying no worker should be paid below that. And I think that is the, as far as I'm concerned, is the main purpose that we're really doing here. And then this Act then must assist us to ensure that we preserve the value of that particular amount and make sure that we guard seriously and jealously that it is not undermined and then devalued to an extent that it means nothing. We go back to square one. I think that is what the commission, I think the regulations that deals with the commissions will also have to watch out that they make sure that the commission looks on that particular figure continuously and adjusting it accordingly. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. Can you give us some insight? I think the main area of concern in this regard lead to the outcome of that meeting of the Committee of Principles.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me start with that question. What we were referring to here is that there was a decision at NEDLAC that the matter of the hours must be referred to a panel of experts. And it is that panel of experts that came back and recommended the hours that are that we have included in the bill. And then there's also another proviso that the National Minimum Wage Commission must do a further work on this once it has been established to look at these hours. And this is not, by the way, the first time that we've made these provisions in the law. If you look at the sectoral determinations, some of them they contain these provisions, so as to provide the safeguards to workers, so that they are not abused in cases where they've made their services available, and the employer has chosen not to use those services. The employees are covered. We should have referred to that. We should not have referred to the Committee of Principles, because then we did not provide the minutes of that. But we have provided the agreement, the NEDLAC agreement to that effect. The Honourable Bagraim spoke about the overregulation of the. Of the labour market. It's a matter that is open to discussion and interpretation. and he knows that we have different sectors that have opted to regulate themselves through the bargaining councils and the bargaining agreements. They've decided to set their own conditions of employment, and they've set their own wages. All what we've done is we've agreed with them and adopted that. And of course, we have sectoral determinations. And sometimes when people say that our labor market is over-regulated, I just want them to go back to a time where there were few of these regulations. We didn't have a sectoral determination. We had basic conditions of employment, and even the time before the wage determinations, what was happening. And Honorable Bergram, he constantly makes mention of the fact that his office is inundated with people who are complaining that the employers are not complying with the law, and he puts that to the department as the failure of the department to enforce the law. And then when we put measures that sought to force employers to comply, then he says it's over-regulation. Because the responsibility to comply with the law rests with the employers. And our responsibility as a department is to enforce in instances where the law has not been complied with. So the fact that people come and complain to us and to members of parliament, we see it as a good thing, because the reality is that we can't be everywhere. And once we get to know that there are these transgressions, we do act. So the issue, there's also an issue relating to the submission made by Institute of Economic Justice with regards to the keeping of the benefits that are in the sectoral determination. We would like to make this submission, Chairperson, as we indicated yesterday, that it has never been an intention to do away with the sectoral determinations and benefits that are contained in the sectoral determinations. We indicated that they will be retained, and as such, as the national minimum wage is adjusted, they will be adjusted accordingly. So the sectoral determination and the benefits, they will be retained. With regards to the issue of the hourly denomination, it's been a standard practice, and we have included the schedules in the sectoral determinations to make life much easier, and we can do that if it's necessary. That's what we're indicating, but we don't have to do it. But we do it because it actually makes life easier. You can see the hourly rate, and when it's adjusted, we simply adjust the schedules. It's not a legal matter, but it serves as a guide. Well, with the comments made by Honorable Mashile on the regulations, we, as indicated by the Minister when he spoke to the media, and also the occasions that she has spoken to the committee, she indicated that we already have developed the regulations. They are waiting for this process to be completed so that they are informed by this process, and once this process is completed, we will then complete the work so as to make sure that we give effect to the provisions that we have in the bill. So that work is already underway. So I didn't get the first question, and maybe Mr. Sifield will respond to it.
If my understanding of the first question is correct, and it relates to point A, improving the wages of the lowest paid workers, In fact, Chair, the National Minimum Wage Initiative is indeed that. Firstly, to improve the wages of the lowest paid workers. The intent is that 43% to 46% of workers currently earn below that level of minimum wage. And therefore, the intent is to improve the wages of the lowest paid workers by setting a national minimum wage. And then in addition to that, then, as Vijay indicated, adjust the sectoral determinations that are still in place accordingly in this regard. So we hope to cover workers that are hitherto not covered by wage setting mechanism, whether it is sectoral determinations, bargaining councils, individual agreements, etc. But in addition to that, cover those workers and adjust it accordingly or review it accordingly on an annual basis.
Thank you to the department, but also just to take note, honourable members, when listening to the elaborations by the department, that it should be clear to the public out there that the current sectoral determinations and bargaining council agreements that's in place, that's contrary to the national minimum wage levels, should not be downwards adjusted, but it should be upwards adjusted. The message shouldn't go out that if you are getting paid 25 rand an hour, then now you need to be paid 20 rand an hour. That's not the intention of this bill. It's to make sure that those that's earning below the 20 rand an hour is getting access to the 20 rand an hour. And the 20 rand an hour should be the basic floor. So I think we are clear in terms of that explanation. Honorable Muteka, and then Honorable Mashile.
Chairperson, regulations and over-regulation is an intervention to the injustice that is happening to our people. So we'll never stop. I just wanted to make it clear. The department didn't, I mean, they said the issue of hours, they've referred to the experts. So for now, what are we dealing with? Do we have the results of the experts, from the experts? Because hence I've said the institute, the explanation is very correct. Because this one is hanging. We're still waiting for the expert to work on the hours thing, unless I missed it when they explain. But if we're still waiting for the expert, then it becomes problematic. I will give you an example from EFF point of view. We are saying 5,000 minimum wage per month. And then, now it was 4,500 in 2014. And then, let's say, we assume it passed, the committee passed it. Come the implementation, and then here's an employee receiving 3,000 this month, the other month receiving 2.8, the other month, they will come and fight us that you said this, but this is happening. That's why the issue of hours can be smuggled and all those things. Hence, I'm saying, let a setup be agreement per month, minimum wage is so much. Then we know there's no hours to be played with, there's nothing. Everybody knows by the end of the month, this is what I'm expecting. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Honorable Muteka, the Honorable Mashile.
Yeah, Chair, I think I think the department may not respond now. I think maybe it's a typical bad course. What I'm saying now is that when you look at the first purpose, it says improving the wages of the lowest paid workers. That is the situation now as we speak. We are going to improve that. Now what I'm saying is that when we have introduced that minimum wage, everybody below the 3,005 now comes up. then when you come back on the Act and read that sentence, your lowest paid now will be 3,005, 3,008, 3,001. Are you still going to say that you want to improve those ones? That's what I'm just simply saying, is that after the implementation date, how would we interpret that first sentence? That's what I'm saying, is that they should just go back home and just think how that first sentence can be continuous in the Act, rather than at the moment that, to me, it may look like on the day of implementation, then this sentence then will cease to exist.
Thank you.
And that's what I was just saying. Now, let's have that little homework. Let's look at it and see. But then we'll come back to it maybe sometimes and then and speak about it if there is any need. They've got specialists, I think, and then they can just have a look at it.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. I just want to caution the members. Let's not refer to much issues to be to be explained and then come back later, because it will lead to us having a totally new discussion starting from A to Z when we're supposed to conclude on the deliberations. I think the department is ready to respond now on that issue.
Chairperson, let me start with a point raised by Honorable Muteka. The difficulty with setting an absolute figure and say 3,500, you're actually taking away the flexibility that employers should have to decide together with their employees the hours of work that must be worked, and also therefore and you're taking away the issue of employers saying, I can afford X number of hours, and on the basis of that, I will pay you at this rate. So we decided to stray away from an absolute figure and talk about the rate. So if you want me to work 10 hours, it's okay, but pay me 20 rands per hour, or don't pay me less than 20 rands per hour. I think that's the point that we're raising. And even if you were to agree on an absolute figure, if I need you for 6 hours, you can't force me to pay you that amount of money if I need you for 6 hours. So that's why we've always had an hourly rate as a denomination. Now, on the issue of the purpose of the Act, especially 2A, improving the wages of lowest paid workers, this is an ongoing objective. The changing nature of work, the work is changing every day. I mean, if you look at what we have now and compare it what we had 5 years ago, we have new things that are cropping into the labor market space. We talk about the fourth industrial revolution and the impact that will have on employment. So new forms of employment are going to come in. It's important that we protect the lowest paid workers, so that even when we have these new forms of employment creeping in, we don't have people who are still paid below the national minimum wage. It's a continuous thing. I think it will never, we will never have a time where this is not required. If you take into account the changing nature of work and the future of work.
Can we then agree, Honorable Members? Remember, we are not dealing with the actual rates now and stuff. We're still on the purpose of the Act. Can we then agree that we proceed
as the purpose is outlined, as is stipulated. The nitty-gritties will be dealt with on how the practical things will be done to ensure that we abide to the purpose of the Act. We're not going to deviate from that purpose. And we have the purpose there outlined on page 237.2 that clearly stipulates what is the main purpose of the Act. It's from A to E. So we're not bothering on that. We're not going to change it. We're going to move to the application of the Act. Honorable Muteka?
Before I comment on what the department has said, let me tell you, I want to add Roman figure, F, because in fact it's going to be 5, because one will be out, the D will be out.
No, it won't be out. D is amended.
Okay, it's fine.
The last part is deleted.
So I want to add a reducing wage inequality. It's not there. Reducing wage inequality. We are at this crisis because of the previous apartheid wage gap. So we are working on reducing the gap. We are still on that thing. So it can be missed. Reducing wage inequality should be inserted. And going to what they've said. The department have said. I think, Chairperson, although I agree with you that we're not dealing with race and how much and all that, but the hours are guiding us, are going to guide us. Now the department issue of hours is not concluded, still with the experts. And now, as a committee, we need to know that if we're saying the workers are not going to get less than 3,500 per month. Oh no! How many hours are we working? Well, what if the experts will come with something that will open a room for the abusers to bring it below 3,500 you are talking about? So, really, the issue of hours is questionable.
Honorable Muteka, can I refer you to the calculation of wage? I think the issue of hours, we can discuss it there. Yeah, when we get to the calculation of wage, because it's indicating they're talking about the number of hours that the worker is. So then we agree that we there's a proposal by the Honorable Muteka that we include, if under the purpose of the Act stating reducing wage inequality. Do we have a view on that, Honorable Members? Honorable Teko? I see you are...
Chair, I think we'll be duplicating, because I can see on the preamble, there's a sentence talking about eradicate poverty and inequality. I don't know, we should repeat even from the preamble, and we repeat again on the purpose again, same thing. Can you assist me, Honorable Muteka, on this one?
No, I've noted you, Honorable Mashile.
Chairperson, we have passed the preamble. We are now on the purpose. Mm-hmm. And then I'm saying on the purpose, we are missing this very important component or aim. So I don't think preamble we can refer people to the preamble when we're talking about the purpose of the Act. And I don't think anyone will lose anything if we insert this thing.
Okay, Honorable Mashile. Thank you, Honorable Muteka.
Chairperson, generally reducing the wage gap, it's a nice thing for all of us to aim for. But the unfortunate part of it, which Honorable Muteka must just apply his mind, is when you are putting the minimum wage, but you are not putting the maximum wage, then you lose it to control or reduce that. Because even if we lift the bottom side, but if those that are paid high, then they just get increased and go up, then you won't achieve that purpose of reducing the wage gap. You won't be able to do it. We are not in charge of the ceiling, the top ceiling. We are worried about the bottom ceiling. If we were in charge of making this act to introduce even the upper ceiling, then we can say that we have got tools to reduce that particular gap. At the moment, you can't, because the upper side still depends on others. CEOs are getting old and they're just giving themselves all sorts of things. So it may be a purpose that we put in, but which we can't achieve on it.
Thank you, Honorable Mashila. Noted. Honorable Teko?
I'm not supporting the proposal. We're not supporting the proposal.
You've already indicated that you are not supporting. So there's two views on the table. One has been supported. The other one is not being supported. Anyone who's supporting the view of the Honorable Muteka, or can we move then forward? As that being the majority view, leave it as it is. I think we agree, Honorable Muteka, that we leave it as it is without the insertion of point F. Noted.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the chance. I want us to note it that we are not in politics here. We are doing the committee work. So it doesn't matter if it comes from EFF, ANC or what. If it makes sense, if it has brains, it should be supported. We are not supporting other people's inputs because we are not clever enough to we do it for the purpose of improving the conditions of that are happening. So I understand this attitude.
Understand, Honorable Muteka. As we are sitting here, even though we come from different political affiliations, we are here to do the committee work in advancing the conditions of employment and bettering the wages and seeing through everything in a positive note. So it's just in that spirit that we believe, but also don't take away the fact that everyone is entitled to their own opinions. And if someone else disagrees with you, it's not necessarily an indictment on yourself as individual or personal thing, but I understand that you are passionate on this point, but unfortunately the majority doesn't support your view, so we are not going to include that then. Then we move forward, Honourable Members, on that note, to point 3, which speaks to the application of the Act. And can we just advise members that we have still a long way to go. So if we can shorten our inputs and stick to the points that's been raised, because there's a lot of areas that we are bringing into, sneaking into, that we still need to get to in the different bills. So we, on point 3, application of the Act, the organization SA Tuna Association, SA Longline Hake Association, CRC, SAFIU, their comment on the application of the Act is, given definition of employee as per the BCEA, assume that National Minimum Wage Bill does not apply to seafarers. Given the unique nature of this, let's first deal with that one. The response by the department, the intention is to amend the definition of employee and that the National Minimum Wage Bill should apply to seafarers. While the Merchant Shipping Act regulates conditions of employment, it does not regulate minimum wages, which means that, yeah, it's taking care of that one. DG, can you just give us a further elaboration before we engage? Because I think that one is straightforward. The bill does not apply to seafarers.
Thank you, Chair. Jan Matsoon for the DG and honourable members. What we were trying to explain in this response is that with the broader definition of worker, Chair, which was discussed earlier, seafarers would obviously be included. And secondly, as indicated, the Merchant Shipping Act regulates conditions, but it doesn't touch wages. And therefore, we think it's appropriate that it actually apply to the seafarers.
Thank you. So is it clear, honourable members, that in terms of that concern that has been raised, it's going to be addressed by the insertion of or the application of the definition of employee as contained in the National Minimum Wage Bill. Yes.
Chair, if I can just add one comment. I think the organizations of the employers in the fishing industry were also very concerned about the application of the National Minimum Wage because they say it's difficult for them to calculate hours of work because fishers go out for days on end, for weeks on end, and they say that they don't regulate hours of work. What we've tried to point to in our response, both in the matrix and in the document that the DG tabled yesterday, is that if you look at collective agreements for the fishing sector, for squid, they do make provision for hours of rest. And if you can determine hours of rest, surely you can determine hours of work. So I think our challenge from the department's perspective is back to the sector to say, isn't this an operational issue that doesn't warrant an exclusion but asks you to calculate hours so that you can ensure that you're above the minimum? Thank you.
Thank you, department. Are we covered in terms of that one? Thank you.
Yeah.
Then the next comment is, given the unique nature as just been alluded to of the squat fisherman's employment, the imposition of the minimum wage would be impractical, impossible to apply. Then it's giving that explanation, but the last part, it says, any impediments to implementing the national minimum wage for seafarers do not lie in the legal framework and would therefore be of an operational nature, as rightfully mentioned, to which appropriate solutions can be found. An amendment should be made to Section 3.3 of the BCAA to include the National Minimum Wage Act after the reference to sectoral determination, including the application of Chapters 3, 4, 5, and 6. DG, is that contained in the draft amendments currently in BCA as we've been given? Or are you talking of in future? Or
It's coming, Chair. It's not already. It's not in the document already.
Okay. So it won't form part then of this round of amendments?
But it is. It will form part of these amendments.
Okay.
This is what we considered having listened to what the submissions were saying.
Okay. So, thank you, DG. So then, do we agree on the amendments then of Section 3.3 of BCAA, those different chapters that's been proposed to make provision for the seafarers? Honourable Tongwani, agree. I see Honourable America also agree. So, any other contrary view? It doesn't look like it. So, I take it as the majority view then. Then we should indicate then to the drafters that amendments in the BCA should also be affected. we move forward from that one. In terms of the SA Tuna Long Line Association, also in the application of the Act, the absence of any reference to a transitional period for seafarers as afforded to farming and forestry sectors compounds the bill's intention in respect to its application to those defined as seafarers. Should the intention be for the national minimum wage to apply to seafarers, substantial consultation and amendment to the bill is required. We'll remember, honourable members, let's go to the response from the department. There has been opportunity for public consultation, first by the Department of Labour and now by Parliament. The relevant statutory and bargaining councils have also been informed of the pending legislative change during early 2017. So that's the response. We know the concern that's currently being raised. We know that the two sectors, naming the forest, the farming, as well as the domestic sector, they are the ones who's going to be tiered in. But now they want, they're requesting that there should be a transitional period for seafarers. And we know it's only those two sectors that's been named. But we know that this process of the national minimum wage and what it will entail and everything, it is coming on for a long time through relevant stakeholders, and indeed the department is indicating that the relevant statutory and bargaining councils have been informed to, in order for them to prepare themselves. That's what the department is actually saying. So they can't say now at the end of towards the implementation day that we were not aware of this thing. They have been informed to align their legislate about the pending legislature change. And they have been afforded the opportunity to comment. Honourable, do we have anything on that? Or are we going to leave it like that, the Honourable Mashile?
Chair, so what I'm seeing here, I'm sure it's it would have been the best comment at the time of consultations and the rest. For it to come now, it looks like there is an element of jealousy that there are other sectors that have been afforded transitional whatever. If the farming and forestry sectors were not afforded this transitional, then the seafarers then would not have asked for it. It looks like their basis is because there are others that have been accorded that particular opportunity. Then also then they want it. But all in all, we know that whatever sector that feels hit hard, there would be opportunities of exemptions and whatever. So there is no danger in just ignoring this for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile, which means, honorable members, I don't see any other hands that the sentiment raised by Honorable Mashile that we shouldn't open the application to be a transitional period for any other sector, except those two are already identified. So we are clear on that. We're not going to open it to any other sector as the committee, because it is in our hands to vary that. So we agree with that one. Can I have an indication? Yes. We all agree, are in agreement. There's no other sector that's going to be recognized for a transitional period. Agreed upon on that one. Now we go to Chapter 2 of the National Minimum Wage. We are still on page 4. At the bottom, the organization, AFBO, on section 4.2 indicates their comments, unclear how employers are to deal with the commission earners who are remunerated solely on commission and not on regular hours worked. The national minimum wage requires payment, the response then, the national minimum wage requires payment of a minimum wage for hours worked. Employers of commission earners will have to comply with this requirement and adjust commission payment as necessary. That's the response to this. Section 4.2 reads, every worker is entitled to payment of a wage in an amount no less than the national minimum wage. So now the comment is indicating that they want commission earners to be excluded. We've already indicated, honorable members, just now that no one will be excluded except those that has been already been outlined in the bill. So do we really need to engage on that, Honorable America, Honorable Moteka?
Of course, Madam Chair. Thank you. I think with reference to the previous one relates to the transitional arrangements that were in place. But I think as far as this particular clause is concerned, it's absolutely not clear as to how employees should deal with this particular expectation, in the sense that if you take a state agent who works purely on commission, how are we going to, what portion of the contract of employment would be deemed to be compliant with, payment of a minimum wage, or if no houses are being sold for a particular 1 month, there's a lack of clarity in terms of how employees should deal with commissioners, and we need to give more clarity so that it is not left for interpretation.
Honorable Moteka. Thank you, Honorable America, Honorable Moteka.
Chairperson, I think every employee or every worker deserve to have basic salary. And then, in other words, I'm agreeing with the response from the department. And then the commission can come, but a person must know my monthly commitments are covered. So the only complications are coming from this thing of ours. We know how these people of the earning by commissions going around looking for clients and all that. They don't have somewhere where they clock or something, control around that hours of work and all that. Hence, it is taking me back again to say this person per month is so much. And then what comes after as commission is something else between that person and the employer. But we know per month this person is getting paid so much, because really the hours will complicate everything for people like that, because from home straight to the clients. And regulations of how where the clock, all those things will come in, and the room for abuse will come in place.
Thank you, Honorable Moteka. It's much clearer now on in terms of what you are meaning. Honorable Begram.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two comments, and maybe the department can comment on this, and maybe even our legal advisor. If, for instance, I am an estate agent and I don't earn for 5 months, and then I have one big sale and earns me R1 million, can I deduct all those payments or the hourly rate off that? Or can I take that R1 million and expand it into a year? In other words, saying that you actually got R500 per hour instead of the R1 million. And I want, because I mean, obviously businesses are going to start doing that. They're going to start saying, well, we paid you X, so we're going to deduct it off your commission that you earned. Or we're going to say you earned R1 million in February. That'll cover us for your hours or 4 hours a day for the next 5 years. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Begum. Honorable Mashile, then the department.
Yeah, Chairperson is one understands what it has been raised about the commissions. The question, of course, is that ourselves as lawmakers, do we really want to see a person that is employed by a particular company and only on commission basis, that person spends the whole month running around with no business and earn nothing at the end of the month? Is that what we want to see? Is that what we want to cherish? Where people work for 2-3 months without getting anything because their income is based on commission. And but those people are actually locked to that particular company, doing work for that company. But then they earn nothing because they have not made deals. Is that what we ourselves as labor portfolio committee wants to see happening out there? I think that is what must reign in our minds when we look at this particular matter. And the issue of Honorable Muteka makes sense. How do we protect these people from waking up doing a service for a particular employer, but because the economy is down, people are not making deals, then this person earns nothing every month, but must travel, must wash clothes, and must be clean, and doing that kind of work and all that, and use cell phones, but any nothing, because there is no deal. That surely can't be our main objective as honourable members dealing with labour matters. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Honourable Mashile. I think in the response, it's covered there, Honourable Members, that the national minimum wage requires payment of a minimum wage for hours worked. And that's the baseline. Employees of commission earners will have to comply with this requirement and adjust commission payment as necessary, because irrespective if there is something that you got or you've been able to sell something, you've worked that hours, and that's what is being protected in the National Minimum Wage Bill. DG?
Chairperson, I think you're absolutely right. What this provision says is that the employment contract between the commission earner and the employer has to change. It now has to guarantee the minimum hours that must be worked in order for this commission earner to earn the minimum wages. And that's the change that must be effected now in their employment contract.
Thank you, DG. So do we then agree that even though it's unclear to some stakeholders, it maintains that that's what's going to happen, irrespective if you are a commission worker? You need to be paid according to the hours work and not, and then the employment as stated by the DG there, contract of employment need to change accordingly to accommodate the law, to abide by the law. The Honorable Muteka.
I want to appreciate the input from DG, and also to add that It will find a space in the bill where it is inserted. We so that later on when we deal with these things there, we can have somewhere to refer that this person working for you must have a contract. Because if it's not inserted anywhere, because this will be this bill will be a law, and once it becomes a law, it should be complied with. But if it's missing in the law, it's going to cause problems. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Muteka. That's noted. But please remember, if we're going to start by inserting commission workers, then we'll think afterwards, oh, this should also be inserted. I think it's properly covered when you look at clause 2. Every worker is entitled to payment, with the emphasis on every worker.
of a wage in an amount no less than the national minimum wage. But further on, looking at point 5, the national minimum wage must constitute a term of the workers' contract, except to the extent that the contract, collective agreement or law provides a wage that is more favorable to the worker. So in the current effect, if it means that the work that you perform leads to you not earning anything some days because you are a commissioned worker or any other worker, it means that your contract of employment must be revised to include that irrespective of what, how the, your performance is or what, you must be guaranteed that 20 rand an hour. I think we close it at that, Honorable Begram. The last one on this.
Thanks. I just wanted to ask the DG to answer my questions because I presume he's agreeing that then you can deduct the hourly rate from the commission. I also presume that he would agree that I could, let's say I'm an agent, I'm an estate agent, and I've got, I work for 7 estate agencies where I've just met someone like that. So then I would get 4 hours per day from the 7 estate agencies. That's my minimum. And then in the contract, as the employer or as the person paying the worker, not the actual employer, I could then say I'm not allowing you to work more than 4 hours a day. If you want to work for yourself or something else, but I'm not allowing you to work more than 4 hours a day. That would be the advice then to every employer, to put a ceiling on the 4 hours a day. Don't allow them to work any longer. If they do it, they do it because they want to do something. So that would be the contract. Maybe the DG can just comment on that because, again, that's how the employers will look at it and say, okay, I want to deduct it, but I'm not allowing you any further than 4 hours a day, so you're not allowed to work. Now, if someone insists on working another hour, it's got nothing to do with me because the contract has to be respected.
Well, DG, can you respond? Thank you, Mr.
Yes.
Honorable
firstly, Chairperson, under the provision that deals with the calculation of wages, 5, subsection 3 says, subject to section 5.2 above, if a worker is paid on a basis other than the number of hours worked, the worker may not be paid less than the minimum wage for the ordinary hours of work. And that provision is put precisely to cover what Honorable Bagram is saying. Now, if you enter into a contract of employment, the contract of employment has to be in compliance with the existing law. So, if there is an agreement that the deductions that will be affected are only deductions that are related to this unemployment insurance fund compensation and all these other things, you can't then at a later stage agree that you will deduct the minimum wage that you've paid to the worker, because the law says you cannot pay this person below the national minimum wage, and this person has worked. So if the fact that the person has not sold X units of houses, it doesn't mean that the person has not worked. The person has worked, and that's why the law wants to guarantee the minimum wage. And that's the only spot that I have to the scenario that is facing.
Now, I think, Honorable Begram, we can bring different scenarios into this picture, but the fact remains that the worker will not be disadvantaged because he cannot sell houses, for instance. And also your concern in terms of the change of contract that's going to be to the detriment of the worker, to say that some employers will then change the contracts for workers not to be allowed more than 4 hours a day. I think that is a gross unfair labor practice, and it needs then to be dealt with accordingly. So can we leave it at that?
Because
Can you rephrase it? Because I understand you.
I don't think you do. I'm talking about a person who earns 1,000 rand a day for 2 hours work. You would then pay them the 1,000 rand commission plus 40 rand or 80 rand. Now I'm saying, if you got that 1,000 rand, can you deduct the 2 hours because you're now earning in excess of the minimum wage? That's what I'm trying to say. And the second thing is, when you say I've changed the conditions of service, most estate agents are independent contractors. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't have a contract. Most of them aren't asked to work any hours a day. They just, if they feel like selling a house, they sell one. I'm saying to you, now we have to bring a contract in, so now you have to give them 4 hours. And that's all you're doing. So I'm not, there's nothing unfair about that. I'm saying I don't care if you work or you do or you don't work at the moment. Now I do have to care. You have to work 4 hours. Now I'm going to force you to work for 4 hours, and I'm going to pay you 20 rand per hour.
That
and I'm going to check.
Yeah, I understand. Now that brings us to the very next point that we were supposed to discuss in terms of the clarity sought about whether independent contractors will also be affected by the minimum wage. Will they be considered a worker under the definition of the bill? And the response from the department is yes, the intention is to amend the definition to revert to the worker defined as any person who works for another and who receives or is entitled to receive any payment for that work, whether in money or in kind. Digi, can you please specifically speaking to the example made by the Honorable Begram?
Thank you, Chair. The law makes a distinction between an independent contractor and an employee. Now, if I understand the Honorable Bakrin's question, relates to more to an independent contractor, because the uniqueness of the people who work on commission is that they regulate their hours of work. That's the first thing. So that is why they are prepared to work, and they know that the condition is that if you don't sell a house, you're not going to be paid. Or if you don't sell an insurance, you're not going to be paid. Now, we've seen instances where people don't get paid, yet they're employed. Now, all what we're doing, I hear what you're saying, but all what we're doing is that we're putting a provision. Remember, in the purpose of the act, we're saying we want to we want to improve the wages of lowest paid workers. But the second thing is, we want to make sure that there is nobody who's paid a wage which is below the minimum wage. So if you are employed and you don't get paid a month because you did not sell anything, does it mean that you did not work? Obviously not. If you have worked, and you've dedicated time, all what we're saying is, if you're going to enter into a contract with me and you were paying me 1,000 rand for working for 2 hours, right? The law says now that you must pay me for 4 hours, because I'm guaranteed 4 hours now by the law. So if you're paying me 1,000 rand, you have to pay me what the rate says in terms of the minimum wage. Now, the contract has to change to effect what the law says, if the committee agrees with what we have proposed, there's no way that the employment contract will remain like that. But you can't unilaterally affect deductions to anybody's salary. What we're doing here, we guarantee that nobody goes home without a wage at the end of the month, which currently happens.
Thank you, DJ.
And sorry, Chair, the example that the Honorable Bakrin is giving is exactly what is happening. That if you work this month and you get R1 million, and people decide to withdraw from the insurance, decide to cancel the insurance, they actually deduct that amount of money that the insurance people would have contributed from what you got, and which I think is unfair. It is an unfair practice, and it's I don't know if it has been taken to court yet, but it is unfair.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Moteka.
Chairperson, you know, some of the inputs are eye-opening. They expose the reality which is happening out there. Hence, we are so strict when we're talking of these things, and you will think we want to overload. It's because of these things that are happening. You know, like DJ have just said, they can't use the person for 2 hours because you are allowed for 4 hours. And the 4 hours also is due to conditions that are beyond the control of the employer. It's not like now it can be abused to say, now I'm going to use you only for 4 hours. There should be some conditions that says, now it was qualified for you to use those people for 4 hours. Otherwise, we'll find these people, more especially this commission earners. We can find them now being told, you're going to work only 4 hours a day. Make sure you meet all your clients within these 4 hours, then you go home. So that's why I'm saying I'm appreciating this.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Moteke. It's really eye-opening. So I would like to conclude on this matter that the intention remains that no worker should be worse off than before after the implementation of the National Minimum Wage Bill. So if he's were supposed to receive R1,000 for 2 hours work, he's not supposed to get now R40 for that 2 hours work. I think we conclude on that one. That's subject to interpretation, Honorable Begram. So can we move, Honorable Members, to the next part from Labour and Enterprise Policy Research Group, the subsection, section 4.6. They are referring to 4.6. By making unilateral altering of wages, hours of work, or other conditions of employment an unfair labour practice, it removes the right to strike over these issues. The response by the department, correct. But the protection afforded through the unfair labour practice provision is brought in to protect the primarily vulnerable and unorganised workers. I think that's just a comment. Any input on that? As we move forward, referring to 4.6.
47. These sections will create confusion, and it should be made clear through an explicit link to sections 4 and 4A of the BCA, what deductions are permitted and which are not permitted. When we look at 4.7, it's stating sections 32 and 33 of the BCA apply to the payment of the national minimum wage to workers. The response by the department, an amendment will be made to add section 34 of the BCA. Section 4.7 of the National Minimum Wage. Department, do you still remain with that response? Can we first have the clarity seeking question, Honorable Mashile, for an input?
Chairperson, I just want to ask for your permission, man, to go back to that section 4.6. I'm not understanding the comment of Labour and Enterprise Policy Research, because my understanding is that that 4.6, it's actually providing from the side of employers, not from the side of workers. But I really do not understand how they actually link the two. That's why I'm failing even to comment on whether the response of the department makes sense or doesn't make sense, because I'm failing to understand this side. Because 4.6, it says it is it's unfair labor practice for an employer to unilaterally alter wages, hours of work, or other conditions of employment in connection with the implementation of the national minimum wage. And then now they say that this removes the right to strike over these issues, and it's the workers that can strike. But the provision is for employers. If I could be helped to understand the link in between, if ever there is anything that links the two.
DG, can you assist there?
Chairperson, let me try and help the Honourable Member. We also, to be honest, struggled with this issue, but I think one has to read the clauses quite carefully, and it is a bit complicated. But starting with Section 4.6 of the National Minimum Wage Act, it says that it's an unfair labour practice for an employer to unilaterally alter the hours of work, etc. Then we refer to Section 191, 3 and 4.4 of the Labour Relations Act. Now, those three sections of the Labour Relations Act sets out a dispute resolution procedure for unfair labour practices. And that dispute resolution procedure allows you to refer a dispute to the CCMA, and you'll recall that we deal with that in the BCA. And it came up in the submission by the CCMA as to the workload that they will take on because of this. But, Chair, if you look at another section of the Labour Relations Act, and this is where the Labour and Enterprise Policy Research Group is coming from, Section 64 deals with the right to strike. And that section, also in 64.4, makes a reference to a dispute about unilateral changes to terms and conditions of employment, but dealing with it in the context of a strikeable issue, a mutual interest issue. So the effect, as we understand it, of 4.6 is that it will take out for any worker who says, I'm not paid the national minimum wage or it's been unilaterally altered, it makes it an unfair labour practice. The worker refers a dispute to the CCMA. It's not a strikeable issue. That's correct. But in terms of 64, if a union 3 years into the future and they're working shifts and the shifts are unilaterally changed, they can still strike on that in terms of Section 64 of the LRA, because it's not linked to the implementation of the National Minimum Wage Act. So it does limit the right to strike in respect of the National Minimum Wage Act. And I think the Labour and Enterprise Policy Research Group are correct to point that out. But in fact, that we would stand by, because we think it's appropriate. There's mostly individual workers who will have disputes about underpayment or changes to their pay, and that should be dealt with by the CCMA. If it's a group of workers, the union can still refer to the case to the CCMA in terms of 4.6. If it's an issue over they're not being given protective clothing or the hours are changed into the future, that's an issue they can take on strike. It's a different issue. That's how we see it, Chair.
Thank you for that one. Honourable Bagram, you are noted, and then Honourable Madisha.
Thank you, Madam. Just with regard to that, I think the explanation is absolutely solid and sound. If we can only strike for a wish. We can't strike for a right. And the national minimum wage is creating rights. And so therefore, if you've got a right, then you can have it implemented by the CCMA. A simple explanation. It's the next part, the Chamber of Commerce, that I want to comment on, but we haven't got there yet, have we?
Let's leave it for now and give to the Honourable Madisha. You are covered. Okay. Thank you. So are we then in agreement on that one, that it remains the same? Okay. We move forward then, Honourable Members. From Cape Chamber of Commerce and Industry, Section 4.6, make it an unfair labour practice for any employer to unilaterally alter wages, hours of work, or other conditions of employment could have a stagnating effect on business. The response, allowing for unilateral altering of wages, hours of work and other conditions could have a very negative impact on workers. It's clear.
It's clear.
It's clear. Honourable Bagram.
Thank you. I actually don't agree with that at all. It could have a very negative impact on employers as well. In the sense that if you can't, currently advised, if the business has to change its model because it's not making enough money, they can either propose a change to the model or they'll retrench because they're not making the targets that they expected to make. So they could structure it in such a basis that we want to now do less hours per day or more hours per day or 3 days a week instead of 5 days a week. Alternatively, we have to go through a retrenchment exercise because that's the way we're doing it. So what this is trying to do, from what I understand, is to not only stagnate businesses, but it could be the death knell of some businesses because they can't change and the workers don't agree. If they can't change, the workers don't agree, then what you're saying is that they can't take another action and say, all right, well, then we got to retrench because we can't change. So this is a real strange way of looking at it. It'll be far easier to do business elsewhere then. Because if you can't change your nature and style of your business without agreement, well, you've got a stagnated business and you may as well not be in business. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Bagram. But I think we need to make it clear that the emphasis is falling on unilaterally alter of wages. You can't do as you please. If you are not able to afford it, you can easily apply for exemption. The provisions are clear in the Act.
I'm not talking about exemption.
No, but that's what I'm saying. If you say that if an employer can't afford... Yes. But in terms of what has been said, it's clear. Honourable Mashile.
You are noted, Honorable Motete.
Yeah, Chairperson, it's a little bit strange the way your Honorable background is looking at this, because surely even here in Parliament, if tomorrow then we can just have something changed, how we operate as members of Parliament or how we get paid, surely as members of Parliament we're going to rise against the Speaker. We're going to make a lot of noise. So it's what this is saying, it says an employer who wants to change things because certain things difficult or changing the conditions, then you must make that consultation with the workers that are will be affected by that. Explain yourself. If you are not robbing them, then they will understand, because surely there are no workers that are going to opt to be fired because you want to change the hours from 12 hours. Then you say, I can't afford to pay 12 hours, now I want you to work 10 hours and I retain you in employment. Then they're not going to stand up and say, no, you can't take it down now from 12 to 10 and retain our employment, then you better fire us. Surely workers are not really that much stupid. I mean, I guess we're saying is that we know during the downturn in the country, workers have agreed on lower conditions of employment, where others even forfeited overtimes and forfeited certain numbers and get paid, and when the conditions of the economy improved, then they went back. And we know those things have happened.
Thank you.
So we shouldn't really see the workers as if they are really strange people that cannot understand reason. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Muteka.
Thank you, Chairperson. This brings me to proposal I've made in the previous 3 weeks, and then the committee said to me, go back, look at the bills, and find where you can insert this proposal. The proposal that I want to add, of course, majority can come and push it out. It's about the workers. Because remember, an employer cannot unilaterally change the wages or the hours. Now the employer here is saying to you, if you don't allow me to do that, I'll go to retrenchment. Then after retrenchment, remember this employer still wants to make profit anyway, then I'm going to hire these people at a later stage. The very same employees I've retrenched. At the later stage, I hire them. Then I'm going to pay them as per minimum wage because they were too expensive before. So, and then you as a committee advise me, go and find a slot where you can put it in and then we discuss it. So my insight is this. An employer cannot terminate employment of his employees earning the higher rate, bringing them back on the later stage, giving them the lower rate in the name of I'm complying with the minimum wage. For example, I gave you an example before. There are some employees who are earning 60 rand an hour, 80 rand an hour, and they've ended over a period of time due to experience and the years they've spent in those factories or whatever. But now, these kind of employers who are saying, since you don't allow me, I can retrench them, then bring them later and give them 20 rand. That's where my proposal is coming in.
Thank you, Honorable Muteka. Can the department give us an indication of how best can we be able to accommodate that view? Or is it already encapsulated somewhere where we can refer to it without adding another point?
Chair, thank you very much. We are of the view that that provision covers everything that Honorable Matega is talking about. But all what it says, as you have indicated, Honorable Chairperson, is that businesses, business owners can change whatever they want to change. However, they must make sure that they take their workers along. They tell them that these are the changes and this is these are the reasons why we're changing. And that's it. That's what unilateral is referring to. When things are done, you wake up in the morning, you were earning 2 rands, and you are told that you will earn 50 cents. You're not taken into confidence as to the reasons why that decision has been taken.
Thank you, DG. Any other view on this matter? Honorable Teko, and then Honorable Begram.
Thanks, Chair. I think he proposed, and we need to agree whether we disagree on the proposal. As it is, with the explanation from the DG, we are of a view that we need not to agree on the proposal because it's already covered on the proposal of the amendment bill, Chair. So I'm not in agreement with this proposal based on the explanation from the DG.
Thank you, Honorable Teko. Honorable Begram, you are noted, Honorable Moteka.
Thank you. Now the question is, what happens if the employees don't agree and you can't afford to continue the business as it is? Then you have to retrench, obviously, or just close the business down.
Yeah, there are relevant provisions in the law that they can use as a remedy in that case. But of course, then they have to give factual evidence as well. We know how that processes work. So, Honorable Mateka.
Chairperson, I don't understand how am I answered on this thing or covered as the colleagues here are saying. Because I'm not talking about the employees who are currently under the employ of this employer. I'm talking about the employees who were retrenched earning the higher wages and later on brought back for the same responsibility or the same job, now earning given the lower wages. Explanation or justice being it is still within the minimum wage thing. We know, Chairperson, anything. Some of the things we just proposed and said them, but we know there is so-called majority which is going to be against anything that is coming from the opposition.
No, it's not supposed to be like that, Honorable Moteka, because we are listening to what everyone is saying and listening to the response, listening to everyone. If the state law advisor or the legal parliamentary legal services have an input to make, they make it. So it's not, it's totally unfair, that comment that you're making, that if it's coming from you, then it's totally disregarded. Honorable Teko?
Honorable Mtek, maybe if he can come with a sentence.
Can you speak to the chair, please?
Okay. I'm saying, Honorable Chair, if Honorable Muteka can explain the sentence itself, because I'm failing to understand what is it that you want. If you can give us this, the recommendation as it is and drafted, so that the legal advisor who's here can be able to tell us exactly what is the meaning of what he wants to say. Because now, he can't even explain it himself. And then he wants us to understand the input that he wants. He wants us to help him to draft that proposal that is coming with. Can he please draft the proposal and put it on the table so that we all understand, and the legal advisor will advise us correctly. But as it stands, That's why I'm saying I'm not agreeing with the proposal. I'm still standing by that proposal, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, understand. Can I give a ruling on this matter? Okay, legal advisor and then the state law advisor.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps the department can assist me if my understanding is correct. But Section 189 of the Labour Relations Act that deals with dismissals based on operational requirements, and I assume that if you can't pay the wage, it boils down to an operational issue. It says in Part 3H that the employer must issue a written notice inviting the other consulting party to consult with it and disclose in writing all relevant information, including but not limited to the possibility of the future re-employment of the employees who are dismissed. Now, I suspect that unions and any other person that has a basic understanding then of labour law will insist during the retrenchment process that one of the conditions put in this notice is that if I am re-employed, it's going to be at the rate at which at a specific rate, or a rate higher than the national minimum wage, the rate that I was working at, or whatever the case may be, and perhaps even putting an option of first refusal there to say that if you are re-employing, you need to give a right of first refusal to the persons that were employed originally. So I think that that would be sufficient to cover the concern, but the department is better placed to advise than I am. Thank you, Chair.
No, I see they are in agreement.
Chair, I just wanted to add that, as the legal advisor has indicated, there's also case law, extensive case law on this. So I think the concern of the honourable member is fully covered, but under the LRA dismissal procedures.
So I think you are covered, Honourable Moteka. Mr. Kwete, did you want to come in, or are you covered now?
Just a small point, Chair. Chair, I may be wrong, Chair, but the example made by the honourable member is that if a person is retrenched and then wants to come back again, I don't see in the bill, Chair, where it is precluded that an employer who afforded the minimum wage and then no longer affords the minimum wage cannot apply for exemption, Chair. I don't see where it is precluded here, fairly, Chair. And the other issue, Chair, is that if a person is retrenched, that person does no longer become an employee of that employer. The person is outside. If the person now applies for the job with the same employer, Chair, I don't see how the same employee could be entitled and demand the same conditions of employment, Chair, that he or she accumulated previously in his employment based on those terms and conditions. That's the input I wanted to make. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kwete. I think for now we shouldn't rush this matter. Can that be one of the areas of concern that we bring back at the last and we give over to the legal eagles and so that they can deal with it and bring something to us? If you think it's not properly covered, it's not extensive enough, bring us a proposal on how we can rectify or remedy the situation. I think that's going to cover Honorable Moteka. I'm listening.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the inputs from the department and the legal advice services as well. You know, Chairperson, we are here to assist one another. You can see the point I'm making is going to protect your own workers out there. But you're making it a Mudega's issue.
No,
let me finish. Just for the fact that the formulation of the sentence is not perfect, for that reason, you are rejecting it. Why can't we work together if really it is going
to assist.
That's why I'm trying to assist you. I've already indicated that can you, if you feel that the state law advisor didn't relay to us exactly what you meant, can you speak to him during lunch? And we've already asked him to come back to this issue and come to with a proper proposal to us. Then we can look at it and decide on the way forward on that.
I appreciate that part, your last part, that they must come back later on.
But can you speak to them so that we are clear on what is actually meant? But for now, we're really going to break for lunch, Honourable Members. Honourable Mashile, very short.
No, Chairman. So Honourable Muteka should have understood what the legal advisor has said. He said that this forms part of the agreement at the retrenchment time. Whether they agree on the services, talk about the first refusal or blah, 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 and all that. But if it has not formed part of that at that time of retrenchment, when the worker comes 6 months, 7 months down the line and apply for the work there, if it is now being advertised, then the other gentleman then says, you have got no leg to demand to be employed at your previous conditions. If there was no agreement, I think that is what has been communicated. There is really nothing really that deal needs to be done after. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Madisha, we're really going to break for lunch now. We were supposed to break at 12:30. You were not here when we agreed on that.
Before break, Chairperson. But my problem lies exactly where Mr. Mashile is.
No, but we're not opening this thing for discussion.
Yeah, but I'm
already outlined the way forward. So we're not done with this matter. We're going to come back to it. And then we'll decide how we're going to proceed. Whether we.
But he is objecting to your proposal. In fact, I'm not messing anyone's feelings. I'm here to work for the people.
the
howling is not going to happen.
Can we please respect each other? The chair gave the indication of the way forward in terms of the issue. We're going to stick to that. If the legal advisor and the state law advisor maintain that we don't need an extra clause, then we maintain with that. But we are not done on this issue. We're going to break it for lunch and we're going to be back at 1:45. Thank you, members.